Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks Sunday, December 7th, 2014. This is episode 1142. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by SmartThings. SmartThings lets you control and monitor your home from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. To get started, visit smartthings.com/twit, and you'll save 10% off any home security or solution kit when you use the code TWIT10 at checkout. And by NatureBox. NatureBox ships great-tasting snacks right to your door. Start snacking smarter with wholesome, delicious treats like, oh, lemon tea biscuits, anybody? Oh, baby. To get your complimentary NatureBox sampler, visit naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy. Time to talk about, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, all that jazz. Actually, our digital photography guru, Chris Marquardt, joins us in about an hour and a half to talk about getting better pictures. But I'll talk about anything that's on your mind. Phone number is 888-ASK-LEO, 888-827-5536. And that's toll-free from the U.S. or New Jersey. I'm sorry, Canada. And if you want to then call from outside of U.S., New Jersey, or Canada, you can reach us via Skype, because that'll work. Yes, it will. 888-ASK-LEO. Now, where to start? Where to begin? What a week. What a week. What a week. The lawsuit goes on against Apple. They found a plaintiff. It's a class action lawsuit. Those are usually put together by lawyers, frankly, suing on the behalf of all consumers everywhere. And this is a pretty big class. It's against Apple. And it has to do, we talked about this yesterday, but I have more details because we have the Steve Jobs is testifying in this trial. It's been going on for so long that they actually got a deposition from him in 2011, which is only now seeing the light of day. On Friday, they played the recording of the deposition. Why are they suing? Well, they're suing because, and you probably have experienced this. That's the funny thing. They only found one plaintiff. But they're suing because, and if you've ever had an iPod, you know, when you connect it to a computer to sync it up. Remember we used to do that before everything was online and we had to connect. There was no way to take an iPod. You connect it to a computer and then you'd sync it up. And then if you connect it to a different computer, the iPod or something, that computer would say, no, iTunes, I guess, would say, no, this iPod is associated with another computer. If you continue, we will erase everything. So the lawyers say, well, that's just terrible because that means you're erasing music from other stores, other sources, illegally, and we want millions of dollars. Class action lawsuit represents 8 million customers in this case. And it could be as much as $350 million. Now, $350 million sounds like a lot of money. But when you have 8 million people, first you take the lawyer's half out. And now, basically, each of you are going to get 52 cents. It's really all about, you know, the lawyers making a lot. They're going to make a lot of money. But the class, you and me, you must have. I get these all the time. I don't even know how I get in these classes. I don't ask to be in them, but I guess they get sales records or something, and they just add you automatically. You don't have to be, you know, you don't have to agree. Every once in a while, I get a postcard. I got one from Pop Chips the other day. I guess somebody sued Pop Chips for saying they were, I don't know what, healthy. They're chips. I don't expect them to be healthy, but apparently I get a refund of $1.50 or something if I send in this card, the Pop Chips. Maybe you got that too. So this is like that. You get a little thing, but what, you know, the real thing is the big legal contingency fees. Now, it's real money to Apple. That's $350 million, so they're defending it. They brought out this deposition. It was filmed. It's kind of sad, really. They deposed Steve Jobs just a few months before he died. Guy's last few months on Earth, and he has to, you know, there's 2 hours he's never going to get back. Maybe it was more. Maybe it was a day. But he said, which kind of pretty much thought was the case. He said, as I think, as best as I can recall, my point of view and Apple's point of view, we were the only ones doing this at the time. And the record labels were reluctant to go along. So he said, we had pretty much black and white contracts with the labels that forced Apple to protect the music. See, the record labels saw the iPod as a piracy device. They even testified in Congress. I remember this. A record label executive held up an iPod and said, most iPods are loaded with pirated music. I don't know how they would know that, but that's what they said. So he said the record labels, he said as soon as there was a way to get around our copy protection, the clock would start ticking, and we would have a limited period of time to solve it, fix it, and get it out there in the wild. The record companies are so afraid of piracy. That would be, he said, if people were allowed to take music off the iPod and put it on somebody else's computer, that would be in clear violation, this is Steve Jobs talking, of the licenses they'd have in the labels, and they could cease giving us music at any time, and that was the threat. Oh, you violated the license, that's it. iTunes cannot sell music anymore, and that business is gone. So, of course, Apple went, and this is Steve Jobs talking, to great pains to make sure people couldn't hack into our digital rights management system, because if they could, we'd get nasty emails from the labels threatening they were going to yank the license. I'm curious, because, you know, so what Jobs is saying, and then they had, by the way, the rest of Apple has had to testify in this too, including Apple's current vice president of iTunes engineering, Jeff Robin, Eddie Q, who's in charge of all of this. He's the iTunes and cloud services group, Phil Schiller. They're all having to testify in this silly case. Now, I admit it was a terrible, and very annoying thing. But you remember, we could get around that. It didn't take long to figure out how to get the music off your iPod. It was all a little security theater, a little game to make the music industry happy. Let's just move on. This is right. It's time to move on. I agree that this is bad practice. And if you bought an iPod, and we all have been bit by this. In fact, how many of you? I have accidentally clicked OK and had everything erased off an iPod. I can tell you, I've received many calls where people said, "Hey, I just accidentally erased everything on my iPod. What do I do now?" And and there were ways around this, because remember, we used to say, go call Apple. They don't say they'll do this, but if you just ask them, they'll let you re-download all your iTunes music. And see, that's why they're in trouble now, because of course you can get your iTunes music back, but you can't get your music that you put on there. And this is the record companies. This is what I hate about copy protection. It always punishes the good guys, you and me, the honest people. It never punishes the bad guys, because they know about it and they get around it. They just go around it. The music industry seems to have learned this lesson, but there's lots of copy protection still out there on books, on movies. I understand nobody wants to get stuff stolen. I don't want to get my stuff stolen, but copy protection doesn't work. We got to get used to the fact that only punishes nice, normal, good people, honest people who get their iTunes erased. And the bad guys just go, oh, there's no problem. I just go there, I get that program, Sanuti, and I copy everything off, and no problem. didn't stop anybody. Worse, in some ways, it teaches people how to be bad guys, right? Oh, my iTunes library erased. Let me figure out how to get around that. You want to be a hacker? Go to North Korea. They are the pampered elite, according to an article by Joon Min Park in Reuters. North Korea has this thing, the cyber warfare division called, I love the name, Bureau 121. And Bureau 121 has the thousands of the best hackers in the world. 1,800 cyber warriors. We've got to talk about this a little more. Let's take a break. I want to go to your calls, too, right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nathan Staten, the music guy. Playing the Doors. Nathan, you rock and roll dude, you. Leo Laporte here, 8888 Ask. Leo, let's look across the vast broadcast studio into a... Why do I get all this room and you're in this little tiny... Wait a minute, you're in a bigger room than I am, Heather Allman. Aren't you supposed to be in a booth?
I guess.
Well, at least
I need room to roam.
You need room to roam. Hi, Heather Hammon, phone ranger.
Good morning.
What do we got today?
Oh, we got a whole slew of things.
Okay, Roz.
Who wants to think about Monday and getting back to work with that dingbat? But we got to talk to someone who goes by Mirth Girl in the chat room.
I love it. What a good handle. We were talking about handles yesterday. Do you have a handle that you use in the world?
Yes.
Like your chat handle?
H-bomb.
That's good. That's good. Where did that come from?
Just, you know, my initials are HH, so people are like, it's an explosion of H's.
Oh, and I like it.
People
H-bomb.
Have called me that for a long time. It's better than my college nickname.
What was that? No, we don't want to talk about it. Okay. You know what my handle in the chat room is? Leo.
I knew that.
I know. That's kind of boring, isn't it? My name. You look in the chat room, it's rarely a name. It's Mirth Girl. It's Tech Dino. It's Rusty Bones. It's
Frankie
Marmot.
The Waffle.
Frankie the Waffle.
I mean, WTF.
Caps Lock. No, it's FTW. Frankie the Waffle. You must be dyslexic.
Right.
Here's a guy. Chris has his own name. But unfortunately, like in the AOL era, he can't just be Chris. He's Chris 1563. Isn't that sad you had to add a number because there were so many Chris's on AOL already? I like your name, though. Hi, Mirth Girl from Long Beach. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. I missed the part why you hate FaceTime because I love it.
Okay, so during the break, I was teasing my... You heard it because you're on hold. I was teasing one of our staffers because he loves... Anything Apple, he just thinks it's the best. And FaceTime's been bugging me, saying, what's your password? What's your password? And I don't hate FaceTime, but I'm not going to use it on the computer at work. I actually use it with my mom. I prefer Skype, but that's easy for her. She has an iPhone, and it works great with mom. In fact, with anybody with an iPhone, it's great. The only thing wrong with FaceTime is that you have to have an Apple product to use it.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, well, I'm all about Apple as well. And
yeah, as long as everybody in the world you know is Apple, you're fine. It works really well.
Yes. I worship at the Church of Apple. So
I love it. Look, I'm using Macs. I love a lot of Apple products. What I don't like in general is any company that says, well, and Apple does this a lot. If you're going to use this great product, you better have only Apple hardware. And I think that's not nice.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. So my question has to do with work and Apple products. I ended up changing my job a little bit in that I get to work remotely from home now.
Lucky!
Yes, except the person who is now the body in the office is not quite familiar with computers in general, let alone Apple products.
It's an all Apple office.
It's almost an all Apple office. Yes, we have secondary PC that I discourage people from using.
What kind of business is it, Mirth Girl?
Well, hopefully they're still at coffee hour. It's a church.
Oh, good. Okay. Good.
So not to be too disparaging about this person, but there's... There's an incompetence as well as a power struggle.
Oh, no. Well, see, this is what happens when you start working at home. You can't fight the good fight in office politics quite as well.
And as the good pastor once said to me before she came into the office, no good deed goes unpunished. I'm the one who got her the job.
Anyway, isn't that...
No one's listening to you right now.
No, they're busy at church. They're having coffee. They're a little fellowship going on. They don't have the radio on. It's okay. You're all right. Just hope that coffee urn stays full.
Yes, all good Christians at coffee hour. I would like to know how to... How to fire her?
Whoa, sorry. No.
I can't get involved with that.
Let's just say I'm putting
my resume together.
I'm sorry.
There's a lovely 27-inch Mac with Yosemite at work as well as at my home. And the problem is that she doesn't know where things are, even though I organize them beautifully, cannot send me what I need, et cetera. So the question is, do I pay for the back to Mac?
You don't need to. Apple has this all built in. You don't have to pay for anything.
That's what I thought. But I want to do it without the screen sharing or anything like that. I'm not there to do her work. I just want to reach in and get
your files.
Doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's very easy to do. I can't help you with the social issues, but I could definitely help you log in to your Mac remotely. So in order for that to work, though, you have to turn it on both ends.
Okay.
You have to go to the sharing control panel on both Macintoshes. Actually, most important on the church Mac.
Okay.
And you'll see the capabilities that you're going to give it. There's screen sharing, file sharing, printer sharing, remote login, remote management, la, 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 la. What you want is file sharing.
Right.
Other users can access shared folders on this computer. Administrators can access everything. You're an administrator because you're going to log in with your... I presume you still have an account on that computer.
We never quite set it up as per Apple, so it's really just the church's name on that computer.
All right, but you have the login.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
I do plan on going down there. So that was the order of things.
You'll log in from your home. Turn on file sharing. You'll log in from your home.
Okay.
And using your login. Once, make sure Back to My Mac is enabled as well. It's changed in Yosemite, so I have to. Yosemite is at home as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you go into the iCloud control panel, and there's a checkbox for Back to My Mac. You're going to turn that on as well. Okay, and it will open it, even if you have the firewall on. It will allow that. But I would check the firewall. You probably don't have it on. This would be a good opportunity to actually lock that Mac down a little bit by turning on a firewall and so forth.
Okay.
And once you have Back to My Mac turned on both machines, set up router for better performance. That's not required, but suggested. I don't know if you have control of the router.
I don't know. I mean, like, I have the sheets with the codes and the IP and all that.
Yeah, they have instructions there. You might do some port forwarding. If it's an Apple router, you don't have to do anything.
I don't think it is.
It's probably not, yeah. So it'll work fine. Now, on your home computer, you will see under shared, if you open the Finder window under shared, you'll see other computers that are currently shared, and you should see the name of that church computer. You can click it. It'll ask you for a login, depending on how you've set that up.
Mm-hmm.
And you log in, and then you have, just like it's on your, you're on it. You'll see a Finder window that looks just, that's all the stuff there, and you can copy it. Now it's copying over the internet, so it's, a little slower. But you can access all the files you need. You don't have to get her to mail you anything. You can even do remote desktop if you want to do that as well. Similar setup. So it's in sharing and iCloud and your control panel. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, speaking of smart things, wouldn't it be nice if your house were a little bit more than, hey, I turned on a light. Look at this. I got a smart... Oh, man, look at all the smart things I got here. Ooh. Yeah, this is just tapping the tip of the iceberg. Smart Things is a way of making your smarter home smarter still. Starts with the Smart Things Hub. This was a Kickstarter project. I'm going to show you the website, smartthings.com. They raised a lot of money on Kickstarter to solve a simple problem, which is to get all the different automation devices, the Internet of Things, in your house talking together. Your Wemo from Belkin, your Schlage locks, you know, your Sonos music player, your Hue lights. These are all cool, the drop cams. These are all cool, but they're all like separate. Each has an app. Now you could do it all with one app on your smartphone and smart things because of the Smart Things Hub. In the kitchen, in the living room, and of course outside for security. There's nothing better than Smart Things. It's simple. You'll be set up in 15 minutes. They've got a free mobile app. And the key on Smart Things, I think, is starting with one of these kits. Not kits exactly. Solution kits, like energy saver kit, smart home starter kit, water detection kit. They actually have a ton of them. They also have security kits because a lot of people, what they want to start with is security. So they have the smarter home security kit and all of that stuff. Here's the deal. I want you to try this out now. Control and automate your lights from wherever you are. Get instant alerts to prevent a small leak becoming a major flood. By the way, starting next year, you'll also be able to control and automate a variety of Samsung appliances, including refrigerators, washers, dryers, air conditioners, even a robotic vacuum. There are lots of existing SmartThings sensors, and then SmartThings works with everything else. And you put it all together, and even the Arduino, and man, there's nothing you can't do with this. Look at all the things it works with SmartThings. Quick sets and it talks all the languages. So here's the deal. By the way, if you're a developer, you can create new ways to use SmartThings and publish them for everybody else to use, and that's neat. To get started creating your smart home, visit smartthings.com/twit. Save 10% off any home security or solution kit by entering the code TWIT10 at checkout. For fans of Twit, solution kits start at $170. Home security kits start at $350. Each kit includes the Smart Things Hub, so you can get started in as little as 15 minutes and then grow as your needs and desires and wants grow. Get free shipping, too, in the U.S. SmartThings.com/twit. Use the offer code TWIT10 and check out Smart Things. They're smart. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Kevin is in Beaumont, California. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Leo. Happy holidays.
Thank you. Welcome.
Anyway, yeah, I just have a comment because I've been feeling like the phones we've been talking about, the Windows phone and the Android phone and the iOS, that we've been kind of talking about them as being really mature in their software. When I'm using my iOS phone, I use it for driving directions either through Google or
Google Maps or Apple Maps.
Yeah,
or Waze or Here from Nokia. There's so many good maps out there.
Yeah, I'll use Siri, and it'll give me I was on a trip and I was in Scottsdale and I asked for a Thai restaurant near me, and it was telling me a Thai restaurant in Florida. I've never been to Florida.
I know, I've had that happen too. Okay. It's like, thanks, Siri. The what's interesting is they've made Siri so effective that it's personified and I kind of want to punch her.
Yeah.
It's like, it's just a machine. It's not a human. But you kind of want to go, oh, thanks, Siri. You really start talking to her.
And I'm getting uneven results either way, either from the map. So I don't know.
Mature is an interesting word when you talk about mature in the computer and technology industry.
Yeah.
Mature really, even in human industry, mature only means old. It doesn't mean better necessarily. Okay. Mature in the technology world means the technology has been around a while and we at least kind of understand what it is. But technology, mature does not mean it works perfectly ever. In fact, one of the things you learn about technology is it works imperfectly, often less well than better. You know, like it makes more mistakes than it gets it right. And so this is an issue that is nothing really Apple can do anything about. It's an issue of GPS.
Mm-hmm.
So understand what Siri does is say, okay, he gave me a command. I'm so excited. I haven't talked to him in 800 billion nanoseconds. And I've been waiting. And, oh, good. First, he wants to know where Thai restaurant. Oh, I know what that is. That's a kind of food establishment serving a food made in Thailand. Okay. Now I have a directory of Thai restaurants. But wait a minute. Where is Kevin? Now, Siri doesn't know where you are, so Siri asks the phone, oh, where are we? And the phone stupidly said, Florida. Florida. Wrong. But what is that the fault of? Is it the fault of the phone? Well, no, because the phone doesn't know where you are either. The phone went to the GPS radio and said, where are we? And the GPS radio says, you know, I have no idea. I haven't talked to those satellites in so long. I don't know. Florida. And it's basically, it's just a failure. And what we have here is a failure to communicate.
Between all the first.
All those things. You can't blame Siri. You can't even really blame Apple. I mean, it is true that some phones are not as good at GPS as others. Maybe the radios aren't as effective, or the construction of the case makes it hard to do. And what you'll find, you know, sometimes. So the way GPS works is also a little funky. You understand how that works. It geolocates you by triangulation. There's a series of satellites up in the sky, and it needs to get at least, I think, two or three. One isn't enough to say where you are because it's triangulating. So it says, well, how long did the signal get to that satellite? How long did the signal get to that satellite? How long did the signal get to that satellite? Okay. The more satellites it has, the more accurately and quickly it can position you. But even then, it's not enough. It also has, and it has to download this, an almanac that it matches up. So it's a very, it's actually, for crying out loud, the phone knows where you are. For crying out loud, this is using relativistic physics to figure out within 3 meters where you are on the entire face of the planet Earth. And the fact that it even thinks you're in Florida is amazing. You've never been there.
No.
So don't be, I mean, it's mature. Yeah, it's great. Thank you. But it's not perfect. And yeah. And so how do you make it better is probably your question. One thing is to the first time you're in a new area, load the maps and let it sit for a while because it's downloading the almanac at that point. And that's a very important part. GPS is slow. The first time GPS works, it's very slow because it has to get the almanac and do some stuff. The next time you get a location, it'll be faster. And it'll be faster as long as you stay in that area. But when you go to a new area, it's a good idea to open the map and let it sit for a little bit. Let it position yourself. The other thing is, remember that if it can't do it, or if the GPS isn't turned on or isn't working, it then uses cell towers.
Mm-hmm.
And if it can't use cell towers, and this is probably where Florida came from, this happens on cruise ships all the time. If it can't figure out where the heck you are, it then just says, well, let me see where the IP address that you're coming from is. Oh, that's Clearwater, Florida. And I bet you that's why you got Florida, is that your cell carrier's IP address was originating in Florida.
I'm not looking for a Thai restaurant in Florida.
I know. And you know what? Siri did the best she darn well could. But if you and so this is a really good example of we what is it? Louis C.K. says we live in amazing times and we don't appreciate it. You talked to a piece of plastic and metal in your pocket and said, "Give me Thai restaurants nearby."
Yeah.
And it did almost everything perfectly, except it made it Florida. And you see why there were so many things in the chain that could have gone wrong that it might have done that. And it talked to you.
Yeah.
And it understood you. And we're still going, but it said Florida.
open the map. I think that's good advice, to open the map.
Open the maps. Let the almanac download. Really let it get a good position. You'll find positioning is a funny thing. And sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's bad. And that's all. And it probably didn't have any position information, and it wanted to answer you quickly. Remember, Siri's also trying. It's no good if Siri answers you in 30 minutes.
Right.
So it has to do with what it's got.
Yeah. It's probably a good idea to open both maps or Waze, too, just to have a couple of them work.
Yeah, you'll see there's a little icon that comes on when your GPS is working. You want to see that.
Oh.
I can't remember if iOS does that. Android does that. But
no.
iOS not? Yeah, maybe it's not as communicative. But you want to get that GPS fired up. And, of course, I'm sure you have it turned on. And you.
Yeah.
Oh, another thing. Make sure you give it location permissions and all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
Hey, I'm glad you asked the question. It is mature. It's just not perfect. Don't confuse many of us mature adults are not perfect either, by the way. We're just well-brined. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a tech. When we say in tech something's mature, it means it's not brand new. It's just a different set of problems associated with it. And mature, in the case of the technologies you're using, voice recognition, geolocation, and natural language interpretation and response, I would say we are not really all, maybe geolocation's mature, but all of the language stuff is not mature yet. This is a very hard problem. We kind of take it for granted after seeing 2001 A Space Odyssey and Star Trek and all those talking computers that, oh, you know, it's, you know, it can't be, computers should be able to just talk to us and we should talk back. It turns out to be a tougher problem than one thought. In fact, we've made great progress over many decades, and we will continue to get better, but it isn't perfect. It's just mature. You ever have an old wine that's not so good? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. I'm just watching, you know, Google has a cool thing. You have to turn on location saving in Google, location history in Google, and it'll work on an iPhone or an Android phone, but you know, I think you know, I hope you know that your phone is always reporting back to where you are, and Google will keep track of that. You can stop it from doing that. Google will keep track of that. And you can go back if you go to google.com/dashboard and look at your location history at any given time, day of the year or week or whatever. You can even, and I'm doing this right now, play it back. So I'm. This is from my vacation last year. You can't see it, but I'll describe it. I'm watching a map of me travel around Turkey. Kushadashi, we're visiting the ruins of Ephesus, which are amazing. And the phone is doing its best as I move around to keep track of where we are. But every once in a while, I will jump to Venice, you know, 1,000 miles from Turkey, because the geolocation failed. And the phone did the best it could and said, well, all right, I don't know where we are. Where were we last? Or maybe it took the IP address. There we go. Jump into Venice. Holy cow. Whoa. Now, I can guarantee you that within a period of 20 minutes, I didn't suddenly go to Venice and come back. But so the location history is somewhat imperfect. I highly recommend you visit google.com/dashboard and take a look at it because it's a fun thing to look at. I mean, you literally know, you can see where you've been in any given day. And this scares the heck out of people because they go, well, that means Google knows where I've been. Well, yeah, because that's what location history means. Probably we'd be prudent not to turn that on if you don't want to know. I think this is kind of cool because I can relive my travels with a few side trips on my vacation from last year. So that's kind of cool. But it isn't perfect, and I guess that's the point. This is an amazing, amazing technology, but it's not perfect. And so when little things go wrong, you get weird things like Thai restaurants in Florida or 30-second visits to Venice. Not, you know, but on the other hand, in the bulk of it is fascinating and valuable. Just amazing. Then there's the privacy issue. And, you know, I completely support anybody who says, I don't want Google to know that. Truthfully, I don't think Google has any value. You know, it has no value to Google. But if you don't want them to know it, and maybe your concern isn't Google, but that, you know, a subpoena would come to Google and the federal government would say, well, I could see you were in Bosnia-Herzegovina on this date, you know, even willfully misinterpret this incorrect location data and get you, and you could be thrown in jail for whatever reason. And maybe you're afraid of that, and that would be understandable. So you have a couple of choices. In most cases, certainly with the case of Google, Google will, A, allow you to retroactively delete this data. I can go into my location history and delete it. There's a button. You cannot have it give it to Google in the first place. There are places on all phones that you can disable location information. You can, with Google, you can even do better things like say, keep track of where I am, but don't send it back to the home office. And then depending on your degree of trust in Google, that might satisfy you. And then finally, you know, if you really don't want anybody to know where you are, don't carry around a phone with a GPS built into it. I mean, the phones are fabulous tools for spying. They've got a microphone, a camera, a GPS. They're always connected to the internet. If you were to design a homing device that would follow you around as best as possible, you couldn't design one better than this. And people willingly carry them in their pockets. This is like a wire. You've got a wire. You've got a camera, a microphone, location, internet access, and you're putting it in your pocket, and then you're saying,
well, but I don't... they're not... why are they following me around?
Well, you could also just not carry it around. My attitude towards this is we get some value out of it. I get great value out of knowing where I am, being able to use maps, being able to do silly things like say, where's the nearest Thai restaurant? Those are all, I think, useful and I think worthy trades. But if you don't, you have the choice. You really do. No one's making you do this. Unless they put a homing device on the tailpipe of your car, then all bets are off. 8888-ASK-LEO. We could talk more about that. I think it's a great subject. And I'm really glad that Kevin called and said, but is it a mature technology? So what is the Louis C.K. line? Everything is amazing and nobody's happy, right? We live in a time of amazing miracles, at least technological miracles. I think life is a miracle. Everything, you know, a drop of rain is a miracle. The more you know about everything, the more miraculous you realize it is. The fact that we are on this ball hurtling through space, through an empty void, is a miracle, is amazing. But if you just want to say technology, we live in amazing times. And then we say, but it didn't know I wasn't in Florida. Why? I love it. Makes me happy. We're going to go back to the phones in just a second. I got lots of calls, and Dan is next in Anaheim. He's ready to buy his first smartphone. He's ready to put his homing device in his pocket, and I'll help him do it. Dan in Anaheim, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your first smartphone.
That's right, Leo. Can you believe it? I can't believe I'm such a dinosaur. My wife and I are still using flip phones.
Do not feel like a dinosaur. You, my friend, are hip. I just read an article that said Hollywood movie stars are going back to flip phones.
That's fascinating. I tell you this. First of all, I want to thank you for that information about Google Maps because my wife and I are going to go to England this next summer, and that information might come in handy if we're trying to figure out our GPS and all that stuff.
Oh, it's so much fun. And like I said, just going back, and you can day by day see everywhere you went, little by granularly, like as you move around a town, it's so cool. You can then attach it to your photos so that in your photo application, you can see a map of everywhere you were with all the snapshots. Traveling is so much more fun with a smartphone. Highly recommend it.
Well, I tell you, we've been getting a lot of feedback from friends who already have smartphones that since we're going to be first-time buyers of a smartphone, we've been kind of steered towards the Apple, the iOS.
That's because your friends have an iPhone.
And perhaps – I think my wife would like the iPhone 6. I'm kind of looking at the 6 Plus.
All right, let's hang on. We got to take a break for news at the top of the hour. I will absolutely help you make the choice here. We'll talk about the pros and cons when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo, our digital photographer, Chris Marquardt, coming up to talk photography at half past the hour. 8888 Ask Leo if you have a question, a comment, or a suggestion. We're going to help our friend buy a smartphone. And then look who's here. Johnny Jett has stopped by, our king, our guru of travel. We'll talk about travel. You know, Johnny, I was just talking about off the air, the Stevie Wonder Songs in the Key of Life performance that he's doing. He did 12 performances, started at Madison Square Garden, ended on Friday night at the Oakland Coliseum. But he, I'm told, has one more, and it's in L.A. Are you going to be back in L.A. for Christmas?
I will not be there on Christmas.
Apparently, there's a benefit concert in the Los Angeles area. One of the best shows I've ever seen. Amazing.
I heard.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. But I shall return, okay? Don't go anywhere.
Okay. I'll be right here. I'm in Washington, D.C.
Oh, the nation's capital.
That's right.
That's actually a fun place to visit, you know?
It's a great place to visit.
Everybody, every American should go there once, at least.
Everyone should go there, regardless if you're American.
Or anybody. The Smithsonian Air and Space Museum. That's out of town now, which is weird, but it's still great. The rest of the Smithsonian's in town still.
All the memorials.
All the memorials, the turning basin, whatever it's called. The not called the turning.
The White House.
The White House. That's what it's called. No, the what's it called?
Pentagon.
The tidal basin. The one that what's his name went took a bath in. Yeah. Anyway, hang on, Johnny. We're going to get
right,
to you.
But, I'm right here.
But Dan was on the line from Anaheim, and I had to break for news, and I want to make sure we get Dan. He's getting his first smartphone. Friends are saying, get an iPhone. And it's true, an iPhone's a good choice for a first phone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good choice for a last phone. I mean, it's a great phone. There's nothing wrong with the iPhone. I don't carry an iPhone anymore, but that's more because the Android phones that I've been choosing lately, and my current phone is the Moto X, have features that I'm looking for. But truthfully, for most people, for traveling, an iPhone's a great choice. Your wife wants the little one. I highly recommend it. I love the iPhone 6. You like a bigger one? Are you a big guy? You have big fingers?
Actually, I'm not. I actually have small fingers. But I'm getting older. I'm 65 now. My eyesight isn't what it used to be, and I just thought
it's a good choice for that, actually.
A larger screen just might be easier to look at.
It is indeed. It's much easier to look at, and I like the 6 Plus for that reason. And you won't have the problem. Some iPhone users who are moving from the 4 and 4.5 inch iPhones to the 6 Plus are going, it's like clown shoes because it's so much bigger. But you won't have that problem. But I do recommend holding it, spending some time at the Apple Store if you can, because even the 6 is pretty big. You'll see the 6 is a good-sized phone.
It's big. It's very thin, though, and in some ways, when you grip it, it just feels odd. It doesn't feel like a phone, but I do know this, that my wife and I would probably eventually buy a life-proof case for it in order to protect it more.
You can. I find I don't put cases on phones. I find I don't drop them. I'm careful. If you're reasonably careful, do you drop things a lot?
As I'm getting older, I guess I probably would be more apt to do that.
So you certainly can get a case that will protect it. The problem is it takes away all the beauty of it. I mean, it's such a beautiful, thin, elegant device, and you put a case on it, it looks like a tank.
Yeah. I do know, listening to your show yesterday, you really like the Samsung Galaxy Note 4. How does that feel in the hand?
Very similar. It's not as elegant. It's not rounded. So because it's somewhat more square, it feels more like all of these devices feel like a slab of glass in your hand. And it's really the treatment around the edge and the back that makes the difference.
You know, as a first-time smartphone buyer, I'm a little, I'm not real tech savvy, but people have said the iPhone 6 is probably one of the better phones for a beginner.
Absolutely. Very easy to use, very straightforward. Touch is surprisingly intuitive. It has the programs you want. It has, the maps. Now, be very careful when you get, you said you're going to England.
Now, we're going to England. That's correct.
Be very careful when you get there because, as you may know, you're roaming. You're no longer on your home network.
Mm-hmm.
So phone calls cost more, but data costs more. And that data will kill you because you may say, well, I'm not going to make any phone calls. And you can be very careful. Somebody calls you, you don't answer them and that kind of thing. But data is forever. Data, your phone is getting its email, it's getting its maps, it's always getting data. And many a person has come home from a trip to Europe with $1,000 or more phone bills.
if we just limit it to GPS and maybe occasionally asking Siri for a restaurant.
No, you can't. You can't. Because, first of all, GPS, okay, you know where you are. Now you need a map. Oh, that's going to download data. Siri, how does Siri know what the restaurants are? Well, it goes out on the internet and downloads data. Do you have email? It's going to get the email every hour. This is the problem. The best thing to do. Well, I'm going to give you the solution, by the way.
Okay.
I'm not going to leave you hanging.
Okay.
You can, of course, go into the settings and say, don't turn off data roaming. That's what it's doing. And then it won't get data. Wi-Fi is, you're going to have Wi-Fi at the hotel. You'll have, as you travel. Johnny, you'd agree with this. There's Wi-Fi everywhere now.
Without a doubt. Get the T-Mobile International plan.
Well, and that's the next thing. Who's your carrier?
AT&T.
Yeah. So I don't want them to change to T-Mobile. But one thing you can do, there's a couple of choices. Certainly, you can call AT&T, and they have international data plans.
Okay.
They're not super cheap, but they're not super expensive. It's 250, as I remember, 250 megabytes for $100.
Okay.
So you can pay for that, and they have various plans depending on how much you think you can use. The problem is you've never used a smartphone, so we have no track record. So we don't know what you're going to use. You can also, when you get there, get a SIM.
Okay.
Three, which is a mobile carrier in the UK, sells a unlimited data SIM for that. You just pop in your AT&T phone. You'll have to get it unlocked first, but you pop in your AT&T phone, and that SIM will give you unlimited data for £30, which is nothing.
Cheap. Mm-hmm.
So that's another choice. You can also get a MiFi card, a little card that gives you wireless Wi-Fi access as you walk around, and you rent those or buy those, and that will also limit your costs. So there are a number of ways to solve this. Johnny, what do you recommend? I mean, T-Mobile's great because then you get unlimited slow but unlimited data as you travel, and I've used that, but it's so slow,
mm-hmm.
it's not very usable.
Yeah, but well, that's true. You can upgrade to it.
Yeah.
But I would call AT&T and find out what their current plans are for international. Tell them where you're going, and they should have a good package for you. And again, it's not crazy expensive, so it's much better than the alternative of going there and turning your phone on and then coming home to have a huge bill. And I've actually had a friend who had like a $56,000 bill once.
Oh, no.
So,
hey, I got to ask you this, though. I'm in the marketplace right now, as I said, and in just the last couple of weeks, I've seen I could buy this particular phone I'm talking about, the iPhone 6. I could buy it at the Apple Store, Best Buy, Target, or even my carrier AT&T.
It's all the same.
Are they all the same? Now, does one, there's no advantage over another, even if it's just not financial considerations, where are you going to get the best personal attention, help?
Apple. Apple.
Really? Okay.
But it's all, the prices are within $5 because nobody gives you a deal.
Yeah.
And because Apple won't let them. And it's the same, when you're going to say I'm AT&T, they're going to give you an AT&T phone. Now, by the way, that means it will be locked to AT&T. So AT&T wants you to buy their data plans. They don't want you to use Three or somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you can get AT&T to unlock it.
It's going to be tough.
They don't apparently unlock for travel anymore. Used to be you could say, now AT&T will unlock once you've had it 6 months, et cetera, but that you won't. It'll be a brand new one. So they may not unlock it for you.
You can also rent a phone.
Yeah,
so are you saying that if I do buy it at the Apple Store and have it all set up there, the AT&T might give me a problem?
No. It's the unlocking that's tricky. It doesn't, truthfully, doesn't matter where you get it. The Apple people are a little nicer. Hey, have a great trip. We'll talk about travel with Johnny Jett right after this. Our show today brought to you by Snacks. Would you like some snacks? Did you go to Hallie's?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You won't need snacks for about 3 weeks. Hallie's fills you up. But for the rest of us who have not been filled yet, these are Nature Box snacks. It's much better than going out and getting the candy bar or, some junk food. This is healthy food. Nutritionist design. No high fructose corn syrup. No trans fats. No artificial colors or flavors or anything. And good stuff, too. Whole wheat, blueberry, figgy bars. Okay, no takers. Big Island pineapple rings. This, you want to know what's in a Big Island pineapple ring? Dried pineapple. That's all. Blueberry nom noms, dried cherries. You know what's in the dried cherries? Guess. Yeah, Pineapples. No, dried cherries. Lone Star. Go to naturebox.com/twit. You will see literally hundreds of snacks. There's snacks for all dietary needs. There's vegan snacks, gluten-conscious snacks, you know, all kinds of different snack types, sweet, savory, spicy. Pick a few or just get their sampler of their most popular snacks. It's absolutely free. You just pay $2 for shipping. I'm talking Nature Box here. Your Nature Box snacks await. Your kids will love them. You will love them, and you'll never go back to the candy machine again. Drop the potato chips. Get delicious, wholesome snacks. Nature Box. And by the way, this is nice. The holiday season, for every Nature Box you order, the company will donate a meal to help feed the millions of Americans who go hungry, especially this time of year. In fact, their goal is to donate at least 1 million meals by the end of the year. Isn't that nice? 1 million meals. You can get them there. Delicious, wholesome snacks for you and a meal for a person or family in need. Naturebox.com/twit. Pick your treats. They're good. They're wholesome. They're delicious. They're Nature Box. I should eat some right now, shouldn't I? They did want me to say that some these are prepared. If you have a peanut allergy, you got these are prepared in factories that use peanuts, so do not recommend them for that. But that's not part of the ad. I just threw that in. Public service. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, the big old jet airliner, has deposited Johnny Jet on our doorstep. JJ is a world traveler, currently in Washington, D.C., where he is going to the White House as one of the top 100 travel influencers. What are you going to be doing at the White House, Johnny?
We're doing a travel summit, and they're going to talk about everything to travel. I mean,
are they going to ask you to get the message out not to go to, you know, certain countries? Or I mean, why the White? Why the White House is a big deal here?
Actually, it's really about study abroad, the importance of study abroad.
Oh yes,
and actually, I didn't even do study abroad.
Because you were scared to fly.
Yes, I was afraid to leave the house.
Your travel wasn't until later, but my daughter spent a year in France as a junior. She has traveled. I've encouraged this with both my kids to spend time abroad because we need to be world citizens nowadays, don't we? We need to understand.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Yeah. So it's pretty interesting. I can give you a full report on next Saturday.
Good.
I'm usually on.
Now, let me ask you if you could give us your typical website and app of the week. How about that?
So I have an app and a website. So my app is called Pager, P-A-G-E-R. Right now, it's a new app. It's only available in New York. But since I just had this lip surgery on my lip, I figured this is a perfect time to talk about it. This is where a doctor makes house calls or to your hotel room, which is great. You know, so many people are traveling through New York, and the first visit is only $49. The second one after that is $199. And
are they going to go? They're going to go nationwide, I presume, at some point.
I hope so, and I'm sure that's the plan. But right now, they're just in Manhattan and Brooklyn.
So why do you need an app for this? I mean, you could call somebody, couldn't you?
You could call the hotel and have them, you know, have the concierge.
Right, but it's
going to cost you a lot more money. That's for sure. And to have an app to cost $49 for the first visit is pretty good. I mean, the second visit at $199, that's getting kind of steep. I would definitely check with the hotel concierge first.
Right. We're breaking up a little bit on our Skype here.
It's hotel, but if you're renting an apartment through Airbnb or whatever.
Yeah, you might need that. Yeah.
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 Now, I'll turn my video off.
Yeah, that's fine. How about the app of the week?
Well, that's the app. So my website is FlightAware's Misery Map.
Of course. FlightAware's Misery. Is it miserymap.com?
Yep. No, the... you got to go to FlightAware. Just type in Google at FlightAware Misery Map. I can tweet it out right now to make it easier.
Johnny's Twitter is at Johnny Jet. It is FlightAware.com/misery map. So, but what is the misery here?
So it tells you what airports are currently the most miserable.
Well, good news. DC and SFO are both equally miserable right now.
Yes.
Only surpassed by Dallas-Fort Worth. Miserable in terms of cancellations and delays, it looks like.
Yeah, but this is not very miserable at all.
No. Everybody's happy.
There goes SFO.
Well, I'm doing the playback, so you play back through time.
Okay. because SFO is usually miserable because of the fog.
Right.
And so they have, so it's just a, it's a cool little thing. I love FlightAware, by the way. It's whenever I'm on a plane and I have Wi-Fi or GoGo or wherever, I always put in the flight number and I can track it on FlightAware better than the airline will track it. So you'll know an updated time of whenever you're landing or whenever you're picking someone up.
Yeah. That is so awesome.
This misery map is a little bit new, so I figured, hey, I was trying to find my theme this week was kind of misery.
Hey, take care of the lip. Good luck at the White House on Tuesday, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you so much, Johnny Jett.
Thank you. Take care.
At Johnny Jett on the Twitter, johnnyjett.com on the web, and on Instagram, he is the greatest, our travel guru. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, the photo guy, coming up in just a little bit. But first, Jay in Los Alamos, California. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. Appreciate all you do. I enjoy all your shows on the Twit Network.
Thank you.
I got a question. I use both Android and iOS, and I'm getting a little tired of the Apple TV, a little long in the tooth, I think. And I'd like to be able to see my content from iOS, and I was seeing about Plex.
Oh, yeah. Plex is
great. And I'm wondering if it's cross-platform and if I can access my movies that I've purchased on iTunes and watch them maybe on Roku. Or
you're killing me here. So Plex is on, will go on Roku, will go on a lot of devices. We'll see uncopy protected stuff on your Apple. Unfortunately, the movies, the TV shows, they're all copy protected, can only be played back by iTunes or an Apple device.
Oh, boy.
And that's the copy protection, and I hate it. And it only stymies honest users because a pirate knows exactly what to do to remove that.
Yeah.
And it just drives me nuts.
Yep.
But, no, that is a drawback, but it's, you know, Plex can't get around that, unfortunately.
Yeah, so. That's okay.
But Plex is a great solution. It will play your media from any computer, including your Macintosh, on almost any device. There's Plex for everything, including Roku. But, so, you know, sometimes you have to do the paid Plex version on some of these devices. Sometimes you can use the free one. Plex, it's a media center, and it's just fantastic. There's even an iTunes, you know, Plex is on the App Store on iTunes. Apple allows Plex to be on the store, but it doesn't allow it to play back copy protected stuff.
Can I ask you another quick, short question
here?
Sure. I know you're a Moto X user. Have you downloaded Lollipop to it? And it has
I have Lollipop on it, but I do not recommend doing it by hand. It was pushed to me. People are so excited about the new version of Android, they're going out and downloading it and sideloading it. That's called sideloading it, where they install it themselves. Don't. The hazards of doing that are great. And what are you going to do? You're going to save a week. It will.
Have you noticed any improvement?
Yeah. Battery life is much better. In fact, I've gone back to using the Moto X.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Leo.
I'll talk a little more about why that is later on. Thank you, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That magic music means it's time for our photo guy. Chris Marquardt is here from his brand new special place. What do you call it, Chris?
It's the secret lair. No, it's the Viewfinder Villa.
The Viewfinder Villa.
It's a place right outside Hanover about photography, and we're going to have workshops here and all sorts of cool stuff.
Sorry, Chris. Going to have you call in. Skype is failing us. That's two in a row. I'm sorry. We'll try to get Chris Marquardt a little bit later. We'll see if we can get a phone call out to him. He is in Germany. This is gonna cost Premier a little bit. Can Premier afford the long distance call? Because we use Skype because we're cheap.
You think it's coming out of your check, not mine?
My check. Whoa. All right. 8888. Ask Leo. That's why the phone. The phone is an amazing thing. James is in the road. I think you mean on the road, or James is in, quote, the road, Colorado. I'm not sure. Hi, James.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Long-time listener.
Thank you, sir.
I had a question about Chromebooks.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about getting one, and I just wanted to know the difference between the Acer Chromebooks and the Samsung and the HP, you know.
Yeah, Carl, let me talk a little bit about Chromebooks, what Chromebooks are. I like Chromebooks. I did not at first. I couldn't understand them. And I think a lot of people hearing about Chromebooks for the first time or the Chrome operating system, which they're based on, might have the same reaction. Google created Chrome OS to be a very, very simple, stable, reliable, secure operating system based on the Chrome browser. So when you use Chrome OS, and you can use it on a variety of devices, in fact, if you're really technical, you can even install it yourself on your device. When you use Chrome OS, you get a browser. That's it. There's no applications. You get Chrome. Now, Chrome, the browser from Google, is, as if you've used it, is very capable, very, very, very good browser. It's what I use day in, day out. And it does have the capability to add extensions, many of which provide the kinds of functionality an application might. And, of course, nowadays, both Apple and Microsoft offer Word processors and spreadsheets in browsers. You know, they'll run in your browser, in a modern browser like Chrome. So if you want an office suite, yeah, you can even use an office suite. The other thing that's unique about Chrome OS is Chrome OS typically doesn't have much storage, usually just enough for itself and maybe a few extra documents. It's really designed to run in the cloud. Your data doesn't and isn't supposed to live on your laptop, on your Chromebook. It's supposed to live on Google's servers, on Google Drive. And in fact, that's why they give you, in most cases, when you buy a Chromebook or a Chrome OS device, they give you 100 gigabytes of storage because that's your hard drive. And it's not local. It's in the cloud. That's why Microsoft mocks Chromebooks. You've seen the Pawn Stars ad where somebody brings in a Chromebook. I got it as a gift from my mom. And they mock her. It's kind of rude.
All right, I'm not going to buy this. You can't use it if you're not online. That's worthless. Your mom sucks.
That's mean. That's just mean. And it isn't worthless. I think it's really worthwhile, but it does kind of presuppose at least sometimes that you can get online. Most of the extensions for Chrome will work offline in some form. For instance, you're expected to use email in the browser and probably Google's own email, Google Mail, Gmail. But there is an offline version of it, so you can use it on an airplane because it will download your mail and you get on the airplane, you can see it, you can answer it. It just won't send it till you get off the airplane. There's similar functionality for word processing and so forth. So when I first heard about this, I thought, well, why? You know what? I have a computer that has a Chrome browser. Well, why would I? I don't understand. But the advantage of it is it's very simple, very inexpensive, and very secure. Because what really adds to the insecurity of computers is all this extra stuff you put on it. Or the bad guys put on it. And you can on a Chromebook. Plus, a Chromebook has a setting called Power Wash that if something does go wrong, you just go Power Wash and everything's back to the way it was. It is a great solution for people whose needs are few. That means students. That means in many workplaces. If you're just browsing the web and getting email, it's a great solution. They don't tend to be super high quality laptops. They're not quite as bad as netbooks, although they are netbook priced. Chromebooks start at $200. You can look at reviews. The differences, you asked about Acer versus HP versus Asus, and there are other manufacturers of Chromebooks. And the difference primarily, of course, is the hardware. The operating system is identical on all of them. Screens on some are better. Some even have touch screens. Screen resolution varies. There's no prescription for one resolution or another. The keyboards can be better or worse. None of them are wonderful. The trackpad can be pretty bad in some cases and can be also usable in others. It's really a disposable computer that is very secure. And if you don't have huge needs, and the truth is most people who use computers don't, a Chromebook's a great solution. For students, it's a really good solution in schools, I think. Because you can't play Minecraft on them. You cannot install software. You can only do what you can do in the Chrome browser. My favorite currently, all the reviewers agreed, and I never got to play with it because Dell stopped making it. There was a Dell Chromebook that was supposed to be very good. My current favorite is the Acer C720. We bought that for Michael, our 11-year-old, and he's been using that in school, and it's great. And you know what? At $200, $250, if it lasts a year, we have to get a new one. It's not the end of the world. And it really is hard to get in trouble with a Chromebook, which is good. I'm not sure what the best one is anymore. I had high hopes. Was it Asus, I think, made one based on the NVIDIA Tegra K1 chip, and I had high hopes for that. I was a little disappointed. There are some with higher res screens, better touch screens. The best Chromebook out there is the Chromebook Pixel. That's made by Google, and I think it's mostly made just to show that a Chromebook can be well-made because it's $1,200. Now you really have a question. Why, if I spend that much money, why don't I just get a computer that has a full operating system on it? Why am I getting a Chromebook? But it's beautifully made. Is Google still selling them? I think they are. So there's a lot of different solutions out there. I hope that helps you. Is there anything else you'd like to know?
Well, I got an Android cell phone and tablet. Will those connect like normal to the to a Chromebook, like it does to a normal computer? Or?
Well, how do you connect them to a normal computer? No.
USB.
Oh, yeah. Well, it can look like a USB drive. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
If you're using USB to go to connect it as a USB drive, it will look. Yes. All Chromebooks have USB ports. Most cases, USB 3, or many cases, USB 3. And then you can connect up a phone and use it as a storage device. There's no Android file transfer type of stuff. It's just USB. It's a USB drive. Yeah, I think you'll like it. If you don't need, if you're not doing video editing, photo retouching, if you're not doing the high-end stuff, computer programming that people do, a Chromebook is a great solution. And nowadays, most people, all they do is they surf the net and do email. There's also a thing called a Chrome box, which is just like a little, it's like a Mac Mini. It's a hockey puck, maybe a little bigger sized box that you put a monitor, keyboard, and mouse on. Similar idea. Dell makes those. A lot of people make those. So there's the Chromebooks, which are laptops. There's the Chrome boxes, which are more like desktops. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by the best place to go when you've got gadgets that you're done with and you're ready to get the new one. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. It's the place to go to sell your old iPhone, your iPad, gently worn devices of all kinds, and get top dollar for them. They'll send you cash, a check, or if you do a lot of Amazon, get the Amazon gift card. They'll bump it up 5%. That's nice. But I got to tell you, you may wonder what happens to all those gadgets. Well, Gazelle is now selling direct. You go to gazelle.com, and if, let's say, you lost your iPhone and you don't want to pay full price on a new one, buy a gently used iPhone certified by Gazelle. They're selling pre-owned iPhones, only the cream of the crop of the stuff they get. Samsung Galaxy phones, iPads, if you've lost or broken your phone, these are certified pre-owned and still very low cost. And you can even trade in your old device if you wish. Prices are right. And they sell them in two different states, two different conditions, certified like new and certified good. Certified good shows some, gentle signs of wear. They're not all banged up, but you'll save extra money. And you know what? It'll probably be better shape than the one you lost. And, of course, all of their devices have been put through a rigorous 30-point inspection to make sure they fully work. You're going to be fully satisfied. And, of course, there's a 30-day risk-free return policy. So now Gazelle is great for two things: for selling your old gadget, getting top dollar. They've paid out nearly $175 million to over a million customers so far. But also to buy a nice, gently used, certified device. Gazelle, free shipping, fast processing, money in your pocket. GAZELLE.com. Get that 30-day locked-in price and decide to sell later. That's the best thing about it. I love that. Gazelle.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Ivan in Santanella, California. I don't know where that is. Hi, Ivan.
Hi, Leo. How's it going, man?
It's going great. Where is Santanella?
Santanella's on the I-5, about 40 miles from Tracy, California.
Got it. Well, nice to meet you.
First time caller. Been listening to you for about over a year now.
Thank you. Welcome. Yes, sir.
I have a question. I have an Alienware M14 laptop.
Oh, you're a gamer.
Yes, sir. I'm a gamer. I'm 22 years old, so that's all I do.
Best reason to own a Windows machine, gaming.
Yes, sir. I have a problem with it, and it just started up about a month ago. Laptop's less than a year old, but it's heating up like a mother. I understand that you know, it's a gaming laptop, so it's going to heat up, of course, but yeah. I have a temperature monitoring program on the laptop, and I'm getting temperatures of upwards of 210 degrees on my GPU.
See, when you can boil water on your computer, that's probably not a good thing.
No, and I've taken it back to the store. They say the hardware is fine, but the fans are spinning at their max RPM, and it's mainly my GPU that's the graphics card that's heating up.
Well, it is normal to heat up. I'm not sure what the normal tolerance of your NVIDIA or AMD GPU is, but I'm guessing it's not over 200 degrees.
No, well, I mean, like I said, I have that temperature monitoring software, and it gives me the maximum it's supposed to be, which is 170 degrees.
Okay, and that's Fahrenheit, obviously.
Yeah, Fahrenheit.
Yeah. So, yeah, generally speaking, you want to see, and I don't know why, for some reason, I'm used to looking at these numbers in Celsius. But
I can give you the numbers in Celsius.
No, yeah, it's fine, but I'm just usually, you want to see a CPU running around 40 or 50 degrees Celsius. You don't want to see 90.
My CPU is running at, right now, is at 52.
Yeah, that's good. Celsius. That's about right. It's interesting your GPU is heating up. I would guess that, you know, using my clairvoyant long-distance diagnostic powers, your GPU fan is probably not functioning.
Well, that's the thing. I took it to a Dell store, and I took it to Best Buy to get it checked out, and they said that all the hardware is functioning properly.
Did they open it?
Yeah, they opened it.
Okay, the other thing that can happen, you know, that the fans, nowadays these processors are working really hard, and they're jam-packed in there. There's literally millions of transistors, switches, in something the size of a square inch. So, yeah, if you think about it, and it's working, it's going to get very hot, and so cooling is important. It will easily get to 200 degrees Fahrenheit or hotter. In fact, at some point, you're very close to it, the whole system will just say, no, we're not going any farther because we don't want to burst into flame here. It can damage the processor, but they're cooled, and that's why they're cooled. The coolers usually are active coolers. They're fans, and they are either part of the mount or they're attached. But then there's the dip, which is the actual chip itself, the plastic container in the chip itself, and it is generally connected to the dip with a very thin paste of conductive adhesive, heat conductive adhesive. Now, you can make a mess with that. You can put too much on. That's actually bad, or too little on. That's bad as well, obviously, or none, which wouldn't work at all. It may be that connection between the cooler, the active cooler on your GPU, and the GPU dip is failed, whether it's the thermal paste or maybe it got locked, knocked a little loose and there's an air gap. That would be the worst. You want there to be a very good thermal seal between the two. So, you know, it sounds like the store looked at it but didn't really solve it. That means they didn't fix it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm still having the problem.
Yeah.
Like I said,
so bring it back to them and say, fix it.
Yeah, because this normally only happens when I'm playing high-intensity, high-graphic games.
Yeah, of course it does. Well, think about it. It's not working hard. It's not going to heat up. It doesn't heat up just because it's sitting there. It heats up when you work hard, but it should handle that. It's an Alienware. It's designed for gaming.
Yeah, well, I mean, I see it normally when I'm gaming. That's normal. I understand that. But right now, I have my laptop on, just sitting on the side of my truck because I'm broken down.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You're having a bad day, my friend.
Yeah, tell me about it. And right now, the temperature on the GeForce, it's a GT750. It right now it's at 150, and I'm not doing anything. 150 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, the cool. Yeah. So it does. I mean, look, you are doing something. You're looking at the screen. It does stuff, but so it's not as hot as 200 because it's not doing a game. But it's not cooling as much as it should. That's too hot. For idling, it shouldn't be that hot. Either the fans, now they look, what they probably did, they opened up and said, well, the fans are spinning, I'm sure it's fine. What they didn't do is they didn't take the fans off and reapply the thermal paste, make sure it's all done properly, because that's a lot of work and they didn't want to do that. They need to fix it. They haven't fixed it. Bring it back to them. Do not continue to operate it this way. It's not good for it.
Okay. Yeah, no, I haven't played in about a week because I'm afraid of burning the CPU.
Well, you won't. You won't. The system will shut down before it actually burns anything.
I mean, the first time I saw it get up that high, I shut down the laptop, closed it, and put it in front of a fan.
I presume. Did you watch these guys look at it? Did they clean? Make sure it's all clean? And, you know, there's not...
Yeah, they opened it up. I saw them open it up. They took the computer cleaner and cleaned it out, and... Then they ran the fans, and they said, well, both fans are running, you know.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Problem. They made sure the fans were spinning and that the vents weren't clogged. But I think it's a thermal paste issue, and they need to take it off to do that. They need to actually take it off, clean it off, and reapply it. That's above their pay grade. So, this is look, part of this is the nature of laptop gaming. I mean, really, you're trying to – these high-end video games really are intense. There is nothing more demanding on a computer than playing, you know, Crysis or Far Cry or, you know, at the highest resolution, which I'm sure you're doing, in the highest graphics as fast as you can. That is challenging. And it's a challenge for a desktop. You'll see a lot of gaming computers have liquid cooling. They have big fans. They have a lot of space in between stuff. Take all that, jam it into a tiny container with minimal currents of air going through it, and of course it's going to be challenging. I would call Dell, I would call Alienware, and just ask, is this normal? Maybe it is. They may say, yeah, you know, we know it's hot in there. What's all we could do? It's a tiny space. What do you want, magic? Because, you know, it is going to be hot. It should shut down if it gets too hot. It shouldn't continue on. But I really think... This is, I don't know what you want me to tell you. It needs to be fixed. I wouldn't continue to do it because after 200 degrees, when you're talking 90 centigrade, 90 Celsius, that's pretty darn hot. I don't think you want to go much hotter than that. We're going to take a break. News at the top of the hour. Lots more calls to come. Our number 8888 Ask Leo. I would be remiss if I did not tell you the website is techguylabs.com. You must go there. You must say hello. You do not need to sign up. You do not need to pay. It is free and open to all. Tell your friends, techguylabs.com. Answers, links, everything I talk about is there. Show by show, hour by hour, question by question. We'll have more with Leo Laporte, the tech guy, right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, MP3 players. Digital photography, anything with a chip in it, any computer stuff you want to talk about or technology stuff, I'm here. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Dennis, Riverside. Hi, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
Yes.
Good to talk with you finally. Woke up this morning, my Galaxy S O-N-O-F-F button died. I'm going to have to break down. Going to have to break down and get a note. And I located a Note 3 for like half the price of a 4 down in Orange County. Just wondered what your view would be on that.
Half the price, like what?
Well, like I think the Note 4 is about $300, and the Note 3 was $150.
Okay, so that's what I was asking. Because that's what we call the subsidized price.
Right.
And, well, yeah, that's the cash up front. The real price goes on for two more years.
Exactly.
And is built into the price. And so, really, yeah, you're saving $150 up front, but it's still going to be a $2,000 phone by the time you,
exactly.
you get to the end of it. So, sometimes I think paying too much attention to the upfront cost is a false economy. I understand what you're asking me. Is the Note 4 $150 better than the Note 3?
Right.
And that, yeah, it's better. It's definitely a better screen. It's an amazing screen. And you know that I have had all the Notes. Yeah. I am a fan of the Galaxy Note. It was the first big phone I'd ever used, and I went, it's big, but I like it. And I think everybody finally realized, even Apple finally realized, that if this is your primary computing device, make it big. So I like the stylus. I think the fact that it has a removable battery and an SD card slot, those are great things. And all of that's in both the Note 3 and the Note 4. Better screen, better camera, certainly faster processor. You're more likely to get updates to the Note 4, obviously. I mean, you know, Samsung is already starting to upgrade the Samsung Galaxy S5 to Lollipop. But you have to be in Poland, but it's a start. And the fact that they can do it in Poland means they'll be doing it in the rest of the world in the next, you know, month or so. Mm-hmm. And that also means, given that the Note 4 is even newer, that it will certainly get Lollipop. The Note 3, probably won't get Lollipop. So I don't know how important that is to you, getting the latest, greatest Android.
Either or.
Yeah. I mean, it's right on the edge. $150, it's right on the edge. It's certainly a newer, better phone. Is the Note 3 brand new or is it reconditioned?
Brand new, from what they say.
All right. So if it's brand new, that's a good thing. Then it's more like an apples to apples comparison.
Right.
It should last as long. I think the Note 3, but the screen's a little bigger, by the way, on the Note 4, obviously. Not a lot. I thought the Note 3 was excellent.
Cool.
I don't, if the $150 is meaningful to you, then I would say get the Note 3.
Most likely.
Yeah.
But just a little tight. I was going to hopefully get one, you know, at the first of the year, but oh well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're forced to now. Boy, I love the platform. And yeah, it's not so much better. I thought the Note 3 was an excellent phone. And the Note 4 is, I'll tell you one thing that they did that kind of helped me is they took away some of the Samsung customizations. The Note 3, the S4, and the S5 all have lots of Samsung, you know, baroquery, you know, ironwork, right. Scrollwork, a lot of Samsung tricks in there. And they backed off considerably. I think they realized, you know, people don't really use all that stuff. For instance, the silly thing that lets you scroll by looking up and down.
Yeah.
Well, nobody uses that.
Really?
That's a silly thing. Mm-hmm. They don't even bother with it in Note 4. And so not having those means that you take up less space. There's less that can go wrong. It's easier to update it to the newer versions, things like that. So right. That is an argument in favor of the Note 4. You $150, you might shop around. You might Verizon apparently is selling the Note 4 for $200.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be able to close that gap also.
Okay, very good. Because yeah. I'm working off an original Galaxy S. So,
anything. Get the Note 3 then. You'll be happy.
Okay.
I mean, seriously, that is such a big jump. It's time.
Okay.
Good. You got a lot out of that S.
Great.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call.
Hey, thank you, Leo.
Take care. Yeah, the S was actually pretty good. That was actually a very good one. It was before Samsung kind of went crazy with the cruftery. Dr. Mom in our chat room says, I use the iScroll in the operating room. Okay. There, if you've got surgical gloves on and you're sterile, there are use cases for scrolling with your eyes. There are some special instances where that's useful. You know what, Dr. Mom? Do not get the Note 4 because you can't do that. And I would hate for you to have to scrub down again. That'd be terrible. Terry in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hello, Terry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
What I have is a late MacBook Pro 2013. I had Yosemite on 200 gig hard drive, or formatted drive, 200 gig on that, Windows 8.1 on 100 gig, and then 200 gig I had XFAT so I could share the
data
files between the two of them. I had all my data files there. I think on the Windows drive where maybe the system powered, my laptop got unplugged, I think it died, and when I brought it back, all of a sudden my shared drive is like gone.
First, just the shared drive. That's interesting.
Yeah, just the shared drive where everything else is just fine.
Well, that just tells you that FAT is not quite as robust as the modern file systems.
So the first question, I guess, is there anything you can think of that would, I mean, I had most of everything backed up.
Yeah, you know, on Windows, there are all sorts of great drive utilities, Spinrite being the foremost. that would let you recover, or perhaps try to recover anyway, that drive. On the Mac, it's a little bit, you know, there's AlSoft's Disk Warrior. I'm not making that up. That's the name of it. I can't even say that with a straight face. AlSoft's Disk Warrior. But I don't know how much use that's going to be, frankly. You could take the drive out and spin write it, bring it to somebody who has spin write or buy spin write and do it. You'd have to do it on PC.
Well, this is the solid state drive.
Yeah, still can do it, but if you've got it backed up, I'd just recreate it. You probably don't need to use XFAT to share those files. I know that Windows can't see the HFS file system. You're running it in boot camp?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, because when you're running in boot camp, then Windows is the operating system, and yeah, it won't see the Mac drives.
Well, I think it sees them, but you can't rewrite back and forth or whatever. So
yeah, there are limitations. There's things like MacFuse that let the Mac read and write NTFS. XFAT's not a great choice, is what I'm saying. It'd be nice if you could go either NTFS or HFS, one of the more modern file systems.
Okay.
But that's about all I can add to this conversation. I don't know of any good tools to recover an XFAT partition on a Mac drive.
Okay. And so one or the other would be better rather than what I tried to do as far as like a kind of a separate share.
Well, I like what you're doing. I'm trying to think of a better way to do it.
And this was free, so that's kind of where
there is
ones where you can pay for the Windows side to see the Mac.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, they're both kind of kludgy. MacFuse, I think, is free. It's open source. But they're both kind of kludgy solutions. So yeah, I think what you're doing makes a lot of sense. XFAT is kind of the lingua franca of file systems. It's just an older and not very robust file system, and you just experienced that. Whereas HFS and NTFS didn't have a problem with the failure, XFAT did. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I got Sam on the line from San Diego. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Leo. How you doing this afternoon, my friend?
I'm great, Sam. How are you?
I'm great. I look great. I'm watching you right now. But look, it's my question goes for a Christmas gift.
Oh, good.
One of them is looking for a Blu-ray DVD. And I'm looking at a few of these, Samsung, Panasonic, Sony.
Are you talking a portable DVD player?
Correct. Exactly. DVD, disc player, Wi-Fi, they look here.
So did the kids ask for that?
Can you believe it? Yes.
I don't. That's so old-fashioned.
Well, they got their own little room with a TV set.
Oh, so they want it for that room.
Yeah, for their TV.
You want to make them really? How old are the kids?
They're all 13.
You want to make them really happy?
Let's do it.
Grandpa want to spend a little extra?
All depends what extra means.
So a DVD player is inexpensive, and there's a lot, and almost anyone will be fine. Sony or Samsung, they're all great. They're not portable, but you don't want portable, right? You just want one that goes underneath the TV.
That's correct.
Yeah. The reason I was questioning is because nobody carries portable DVD players anymore. That's like the Walkman. That's old school. But yeah, I mean, playing back Blu-rays is nice. But I think if you really wanted to be a Super Santa, you'd get them a PlayStation, Sony PlayStation, or an Xbox One. They are Blu-ray players. They could take Blu-ray discs and play back movies, but of course they're also game machines.
Well, they do have a game machine, Xbox.
All right.
Xbox One, yeah.
They have an Xbox One. They have a Blu-ray player. They maybe have the old Xbox.
Okay, the 360?
Yeah, that doesn't have Blu-ray. That comes from an era when Microsoft thought that HD DVD was going to be the format.
Yeah, Leo, but one room has it set up in the little game room. And so this is actually going to be for their bedroom.
Ah, all right. Yeah, they're all the same.
Gotcha.
There isn't really a big difference.
Now, what about the Wi-Fi one? I got one here that says the Wi-Fi. One says
Blu-ray, they want you to be able to connect to the internet.
Okay.
Because it's for anti-piracy purposes. They want to be able to revoke the keys and send out new ones. They have never done that. However, from time to time, you'll put a Blu-ray disc in and they'll say, oh, I need to get an update. And it'll go online. They've also built in some stupid interactive features that use the internet. You don't have to have internet access to use a Blu-ray player. But if you get one, and I presume the kids have Wi-Fi in the house, get one with Wi-Fi. It makes it easy. They don't have to run a cable.
Yes, sir, they do.
Yeah. So get the Wi-Fi.
Okie dokie.
Yeah. Hey, you're a good grandpa, Sam.
Well, thank you to the old man. I'm sure you are too, pal.
not yet. Oh, don't get me nervous now. Not yet, I hope.
I got you covered.
Thanks, Sam.
Okay, buddy.
Take care. Happy Christmas.
I'll see you since.
All right. Richard, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk with you. I've been reading about this personal cloud device, and I'm wondering, can I store virtually everything on my computers in it?
You could, but you wouldn't. So which personal cloud device are you hearing about?
I've heard about WD and then another one I can't remember the name of. I think it starts with an A, though.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. I use a transporter. There's Pogo Plug. There's Western Digital makes one. The whole idea of these is that people don't trust Google or Microsoft to store everything.
Right.
So you would like to have – what you would like to have is that same capability, but you own the hard drive because that's all it is. Google owns a hard drive with Google Drive.
Right.
You own the hard drive, and that hard drive is internet accessible. But the problem, of course, is your hard drive in your computer is probably a terabyte or two. The idea of moving all that data onto the cloud is probably impractical. It's just too much data. Those cloud drives are really designed for the data that is less hefty. Pictures, of course, are fine, and camera phones will upload to all of these devices.
Right.
I think documents like word processing and spreadsheets, those aren't very big. Even
right.
Your music files aren't very big. You just don't want everything on your computer up there. You want it's like a backup. You want just the data that you made that you need a copy of.
Now, I have a bunch of pictures on Picasa.
Yeah.
Would those be transportable to this?
Yeah, sure. It's a hard drive, so anything that you could get on your local hard drive, you could get on your cloud drive. It's just impracticable to do a whole lot because it just takes time because it's got to come in over the internet.
Now, question about the devices. I have a tablet, I have a smartphone, and I have a portable and a desktop. Can this device handle... as long as they're not duplicates, handle all that stuff?
Yeah. The one I would recommend I use and I love is called Transporter.
Right.
And what it is I would just say they have a little – they have one that's like a puck, hockey puck, that you plug your own USB drive in. So you can choose how big a drive you want and so forth.
Right.
You plug a drive into that. I would get two. They're $99 each, one for your home and one for your office. This is what I do.
They're not working, so it's all for the home.
Okay. Well, you want one off-site, so find another place you can keep it, your sister's or something.
Yeah, right.
In fact, this is a good thing. You could share with somebody in the family.
Yeah.
Have them have one. Your data gets copied to your local one, and then over time also gets propagated to the other one. So you now have three copies. You have your copy on your computer. You have your copy on your drive in the house, and you have a copy on in your sister's house.
Right.
And that's kind of nice because that's you got three places to get it. You can see it's on the internet. It's public on the internet. So they have transporter apps for Android and iOS.
Uh-huh.
So you can – I open my transporter folder on my phone, and I can get any file that's on my transporter, which is awesome.
Right. You know, that would be very valuable.
Yeah. And those apps are free. So it's basically $99 plus a hard drive.
Now, I have an external hard drive that attaches to my laptop.
You could use that, but once you've used it with a transporter, it can only be used with a transporter. It has a unique file format that is not compatible with anything else.
Oh, I see. So I get a separate hard drive and then plug that all in.
Yeah, just plug it in. That's what I do. I have one here. I'm looking at it right now. Hello. And it's sitting here, and so everything gets copied to it locally. And then it talks to the one I have at home. And that one's even bigger. They don't have to match in size. And
how does it talk to the one at home?
Over the internet.
Oh, it's just over the internet. Okay,
yeah.
That sounds simple.
Using encrypted, using SSL, so it's encrypted. It's
right.
Totally private.
Yeah, that's what I really want.
Yeah, and there are a lot of companies that make these. I like the transporter. That's what I use.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I think it's a great solution. Just remember that because it's talking over the internet, it's at internet speeds. It's not instantaneous. And if you're talking many gigabytes or terabytes worth of data, that could take months. But you don't have to. You don't have to think about it. It's just kind of in the background. You know, it's kind of slowly trickling over there. Leo Laporte,
the tech guy.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I want to welcome Ryan and Catherine in our studios. Newly engaged, they're from New York City. They actually got engaged, and then Ryan said, "And now to celebrate, we're going to travel to California to visit Leo." And they're still engaged, ladies and gentlemen. That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. Holy cow. You, nice. That's nice. Catherine, you deserve a lot of credit. Hey, Ryan seems like a nice guy. Yeah. He's just geeky. It's okay. Do you work in the tech business?
I do.
Yeah. He's a web guy.
Yeah.
That's the future, my friend. This internet's going places. Debbie in Ontario, California. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Debbie.
So my husband, my wonderful husband, surprised me with my Christmas present early. He got me an Asus Transformer book.
How do you feel about that?
It's beautiful.
I hear a but.
Well, no. It's beautiful. But my concern is he was excited to tell me that he got the extended warranty and the antivirus.
Good.
And I wanted to make sure that these are things that we needed, because I could have swore I heard you say we don't need an extended warranty.
No. That's different. It's his. He wants to be nice to you.
He is nice to me.
He's very nice. It's a very nice gift. They're beautiful. They're wonderful laptops, and I love them. I recommend them. If you were going to the store today and you were saying to me, well, Leo, should I get the extended warranty? I would explain to you that there's nothing wrong with an extended warranty. It's just it's an insurance plan. And all insurance plans make money for the company selling them. Sometimes they make more. Sometimes they make less. Depends who you're getting it from. But, you know, they figure it out. They charge you just enough so that they make a profit. And the likely, you know, it's all statistics, just like actuarial science, just like an insurance company. I prefer to self-insure. Sometimes, in my opinion, and this is the real knock on it, depending on who you get the extended warranty from, they don't really, you know, they're not good. They don't honor it. If it's not from the original manufacturer, maybe, you know, it may not work out all that well. But the peace of mind is often well worth it. Certainly if you're buying, for instance, an AppleCare extended warranty, you're getting it from Apple. You know, yeah, Apple's going to make money, but it gives you peace of mind because if something breaks, well, you know, you can bring it back. Who's the extended warranty from? Is it from the store? Is it from Asus?
Let's see.
It's probably not from Asus because... You know.
Yeah, I think it's from the store.
Yeah, and is it the Best Buy or?
No, it was another store, Curacao.
Okay, yeah. if it's a good store, and usually stores like that, they go out to Square Trade or other third party insurers, and they're fine. You know, there's nothing. No, it's peace of mind, and he already bought it, so thank you. Now,
my thing was, I mean, he just bought it yesterday, so we could. I think just return everything and then rebuy something without the warranty and the antivirus, which...
I would keep the warranty because you don't know.
Okay.
You don't know. And that's assuming that it's a trustworthy company that is selling the warranty and they're going to give you the service that they promised. That's nice to have.
Okay. All right.
That's especially in a new thing. You know, it's nice because you'll be, you know, anything goes wrong, you bring it back. That's fine. That's good.
All right.
Now, as for the antivirus, this is a win.
Bullguard antivirus.
Yeah, I'd bring that back.
Bring that back. Okay.
You don't need Windows 8.1 comes with an antivirus. Microsoft finally builds one in.
Okay.
Antivirus is of dubious value. It's a second line of protection in case you do something dumb and get infected, but it won't keep you from doing something dumb and getting infected, and so. You know, the Windows antivirus is sufficient.
Okay.
Mostly, you've got to be careful about where you get stuff from. You know, don't go to sites and download. You don't do it. Teenagers do this. You're not going to do
this. Yeah, I don't download.
No, you're not going to go to...
I got caught with a virus once, and that was it.
Yeah, probably because you went to, like, superduperringtones.com and free ringtone, and you downloaded a free ringtone plus some extra stuff. So just be careful. And, you know, nowadays, unfortunately, I'm sorry to say... A lot of the download sites, CNET's the worst, download.com, will attach to the download, the perfectly legitimate download, a bunch of adware. It's not exactly a virus, but it screws up your machine. So just be careful about where you get files. Get it from the original person. Make sure it's somebody trustworthy. Be very careful about clinking links in Facebook. You know, one very common virus scam is hack somebody's Facebook account. Once you do, send a message to everybody they know saying, you won't believe what you did last night. I've got the video here with a link to a fake YouTube site. Looks just like YouTube.
Right.
Most of them click the link. They say, oh, it's YouTube. I want to see. What did I do last night? I thought I was asleep. And then it says, well, you can't see the video until you download a new copy of Flash. It's not up to date. You say, well, that happens a lot. I guess I'll get the latest copy of Flash. It wasn't Flash. It wasn't YouTube. And now, surprise, you're infected just like your friend was. Those are the things to watch out for. And the antivirus won't protect you because it thinks you know what you're doing.
Okay.
It has to. It has to trust the human because otherwise you wouldn't be able to do anything. It would say, well, you sure you want to do? You don't want to. No, that's dumb. You don't want to do that. It wouldn't let you do anything. So trust the human. And that's so the human is the weak link here.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. You get
this
it?
This is an okay gift sentence transformer book.
What are you? Dad, your husband's the best guy in the world. I love him.
I'm
going to give him a big hug for treating you so well. Are you kidding? Happy holidays. And he gave it to you early?
He did.
This guy's nice. Next time, tell him you want a diamond, though, okay?
Well, yeah. I got several of those.
Oh, you're good. Okay, this is all right. Hey.
All right, Leo. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Debbie. I appreciate it. Right. Take Bye-bye. Care. Chris in Miami, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Good. I didn't want to do the whole hey thing last time because your headset flew off.
I think it did. I remember that. You blew it right off my head.
You know, I was going to call back in and you said, no, Chris is here. Chris is here. Let's talk. And I'm like, I'm in trouble already.
Oh, boy. No, you shouldn't have brought that up now. See, you prejudiced your case.
No, I
will give you a clean slate, my friend. Clean slate.
No, we're always a clean slate. I'm always happy when
You know why you're a clean slate? Because Leo has no memory.
Yeah, well,
I can't. I don't know what I had for breakfast.
Oh, my God. You were talking about that person today at the concert.
Well, I think that was off. Was it off the air? I hope it was off the air. I was talking about I went to a wonderful concert, a Stevie Wonder concert on Friday. I loved it. Went to a Fleetwood Mac concert on Wednesday. An embarrassment of riches. In both cases, I don't want to go to concerts anymore. There's a big, loud guy taking pictures with his eye. You know what really annoyed me? I'm sorry you got me started.
But that's okay because I'm in the same way when I go out in public, especially at Whole Foods.
Sometimes I wonder about people. The new thing is a selfie, right? You're at a concert and you want to take a picture, a selfie, to show that you're at the concert.
Right.
And I'm behind this person and the flash is going off in my eyes so they can have a selfie. I'm trying to watch one of the world's greatest performers at the concert of my lifetime, and this nitwit is taking a selfie. Yep. So, of course, what do? I photobomb them every time, and they can't see me because they don't know. So they're going to get home, and they're going to have this really weird-looking person behind them making faces. Yes, that was me telling you never do that again.
Yeah.
So annoying.
Well, you know, it's like I was mentioning to Heather, too. I don't know what's going on with people, but it's like, you know what? It's getting pretty bad out there. I went to Whole Foods Market, of course, where shopping is a joint. Spending money is easy.
Yeah.
And I went in there, and I'm standing there. I'm at the bin section, choosing my stuff, you know, rice.
You get the thing, and then you have to have the little twist tie and write in a pen. They give you a pen, and you got to write in a little number on the twist tie.
No.
Yeah.
No, I didn't get that far yet.
Okay. Hang on, because you know what?
Yep.
I used up all your time. But I'm going to give you a moment right after the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm like a geek in the sun. 8888, Ask Leo. We're on last segment here. And, you know, given that we've got Chris in Miami on the line, this may be the last call. Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm still here.
So you're at Whole Foods. You've been standing in the bin aisle.
You know, but I also want to, my main reason for calling before I get to that really, really quick is that I do need a good, I was thinking Seagate backup hard drive for my Mac, maybe 2 or 3 terabytes, but I'm at the bin section and this guy comes by and he almost, like I was telling Heather, he almost knocks me over. I mean, he doesn't even turn around, you know, and even if he doesn't mean it. at least turn around and say, hey, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm in a little bit of a rush. Okay, fine, cool. Then I'm over in produce, and he comes over to me and says, hey, buddy, do you have a problem with me?
Yes, I will
if you don't get away from me.
I know. People today, we sound like two old men on a porch. Get the hard drive. Doesn't matter what kind you get. Nowadays, there are only a handful of hard drive manufacturers because everybody's been acquired, you know. Hitachi bought IBM's hard drive business, and then who bought Seagate bought Hitachi. There's basically Western Digital, Seagate, and a few small guys. It doesn't matter, in other words. So get the one you like, the best price, has the features you want. I buy, you know, hard drives at this point, I think, are a commodity, especially spinning ones. Because, you know, as far as it goes, when you buy a new computer, when you're getting an internal hard drive, I would absolutely get a solid-state drive. I would not get a spinning drive. And I think the spinning drives really now are backup drives. They're external data drives. And the prices are plummeting. It doesn't really matter. You'll hear people anecdotally say, oh, I have great experience with this or that. For instance, here we buy Western Digital drives. And then you have to choose the color, depending on what you're using it for. But I don't think it really matters. I don't really think it matters. We get Western Digital for what it's worth. People smarter than I am. Brandon, Huntington Beach, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Well, I'm trying to connect my girlfriend's laptop. They got a new wireless provider, and it is not working. And something that takes me a few seconds, it's not working. There's other stuff going on, but they got a new internet provider. I can link to it, but then it keeps saying there's a problem with the modem and the router.
Hold
on there.
She has a wireless access point?
Yes.
And it's connected to the new provider?
Yes.
And other devices are able to use the wireless access point?
Correct.
Okay, they log in, no problem. And is it password protected?
Yes.
Okay. Using WPA2?
Correct.
Your girlfriend's laptop, older?
Yes.
May not support WPA2.
It's running on Vista. Is that the problem? It's very old.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. That's what I thought.
Yeah. So I do encourage encryption on wireless access points. Otherwise, every bit of data you're transmitting is visible.
Correct.
Now, if you're in the country and nobody's sitting on your curb, who cares?
Right.
But if you're in an urban area, you're in an apartment, I wouldn't do that. The best protection is WPA2 because it works. It's effective. There was an earlier form that older routers and older computers and Vista computers used called WEP,
right.
Wired Equivalent Protocol, that was cracked. It was broken. And if a person with malign intent, and it does require malign intent, and the right skills and some free software can see your signal, even if it's encrypted with WEP, he can, in about a minute, get enough information to unencrypt it, and then he's on. So we don't usually recommend WEP, but it is better than nothing, and it will stop anybody but somebody who's seriously trying to hack you.
Right.
So one alternative you have is to use WEP.
Okay.
On the wireless access point, but that is going to compromise you slightly.
All right. That actually helps very much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right. Take care.
All right. Sorry about that. I bet you that's what it is. It's not that Vista wouldn't support it, but it's the hardware that's in a Vista machine is unlikely to. Joanne is in Warwick, Rhode Island?
Yeah.
Oh.
You know Rhode Island.
I know. I grew up in Providence. My mom lives in Cranston.
No way.
Yeah. I have been to the Best Buy in Warwick.
The Best Buy, yeah.
That's where we bought my mom's last computer.
And the other one's over the bridge.
Over the bridge, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I know. My daughter lives in San Francisco. I bought her a couple Acers.
Aren't you a nice mom?
I know.
Is she a student?
No, she graduated.
You're just generous.
Yeah, but here's the bigger picture. she's gotten some new jobs out there in the California area, and everyone uses a Mac.
Those hippies.
I know. Too bad, huh? So I want to, I just went online and looked at Mac Air.
Yeah. Oh, you want to make your daughter happy.
Yeah.
Get her a MacBook Air. She's going to say, Mom, you've never been so good to me.
I know, but my question is, and I don't trust some of the techs or the salespeople at Best Buy or Apple.com.
You trust me, though, right?
Well, I've been listening to you for a very long time.
All right. Well, I'll give you the straight answer here.
What should I buy? 286, 500, you know, 500?
It's, you know, storage, okay. So these MacBook Airs are beautiful. They're thin. They're light. They're elegant. Everybody in the industry has been copying them for years because they're the best. They're pricey.
They are pricey.
They're pricey. But they're high quality, and they're unibody aluminum. Apple is not stinting on these. I want to say you get what you pay for. Yeah, Apple makes probably a little more profit than most people. So you're getting what you pay for, and Apple's getting what they need. So it's expensive. I understand. You're getting her a Tiffany ring. You're getting her something nice. Now, the question is storage. These are using solid-state drives. That's great. They're super fast. And they make it makes a huge difference in performance, but they cost more per gigabyte. So the way Apple keeps the price a little bit in control is by not giving you as much storage. And they start at 128. They do go up to 512. I think even now to a terabyte, but it costs a lot more to up the amount of storage. It's hard to say. Depends on what your daughter does, how much storage she needs.
I'm thinking, she's 24. It's music. And
get 256. No. For most people, I get 128 because I don't store everything on the computer. I do, you know, I take care of it. I you know, if you're not paying any attention, you just put everything on there, it's going to fill up. But if you say, well, I'm not going to tell all the pictures I ever took, just this year's pictures, and then when the year comes to an end, I'll move those pictures off to some other storage somewhere, and I'll, you know, to make sure I don't fill up the drive. But if you say, well, I'm just going to keep putting things on here till it's done, well, you'll fill it up, yes.
So it was between the 256 model.
256 is plenty.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay, because I...
And then
I
just tell your daughter, look.
Like you, and he said, oh, 256, and then I looked up 500.
No, 256 is plenty. Stick with that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.